come.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Charlotte has long been an aspirational city, and in most cases, our aspirations have borne fruit. I mean, no one really believed we would snag an NBA team in the 1980s, but we did. Despite our fondest dreams, no one outside of Charlotte could fathom that an NFL team would locate here, but today we're home to the Panthers. Similarly, it surprised financial experts in New York and San Francisco when Charlotte emerged as the second largest banking city in the country. So we've achieved many goals, but evidently we haven't stopped setting new ones. In a short while, the new intermodal facility at Charlotte Douglas International Airport will open and begin accommodating a flow of cargo coming in from the coast to be distributed by rail, truck, and sometimes by plane to points throughout the country. And the flow of that cargo promises to increase exponentially when the Panama Canal finishes its expansion and trade routes are altered to take advantage of easier passage from west to east. The cargo is in much larger ships that will be traveling through the canal will transit through Charlotte. At least that's the plan. So why not push Charlotte to become a hub of international commerce, a global economic center? Well, that, evidently, is Charlotte's next big dream. And here to talk about that with us and about that prospect is Mark Beatty, Charlotte-based principal with Hickey & Associates, LLC. They are a global site selection and public incentives firm. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Morning.
Chase Saunders is a former Superior Court judge and now an attorney with the McNair Law Firm, concentrating in general business, business development, and global competitiveness. He is also the author of a white paper called Create It, Move It. No, let me do it again. Create It, Make It, Move It. Welcome back.
Thank you very much.
Good to see you. Dr. Tony Zeiss is president of Central Piedmont Community College, which will co-host with the Charlotte Business Journal a Global Competitiveness Summit, which I'm told is sold out, but it's nonetheless on the schedule for this Wednesday. Welcome back to the program as well.
Thank you.
And joining us by phone for the first part of the program here from Washington, D.C. is our mayor, Patrick McCrory. Thank you for being with us again, Patrick.
Patrick Cannon.
Oh, excuse me, Patrick Cannon, excuse me. Patrick, good morning. Welcome, Mr. Mayor. Old habits are hard to break.
McCrory get that quite a bit these days. but I've assured everyone that he is the governor and I am the mayor.
Okay, well, I'm very sorry for that mistake. I don't know how that happened.
No, it's fine. It's okay.
This is a sold-out global competitiveness summit coming up this week, but that's just the tip of the iceberg. There have been a group of people, of some of you gathered at this table, who have been meeting for a long time on a regular basis, 4 years now, to talk about global competitiveness and global ambitions that Charlotte may have. Who started these meetings?
Well, I have to give that to Judge Saunders. We both belong to the Uptown Rotary Club, and one day he said to me, Tony, he says, you know, with this intermodal facility, we need to think bigger. We need to be able to make things and move things better than anyone else in the country. And the more that I thought about that, the more I realized that there's one thing we really did lack at a couple of years ago or 3 years ago, and that's a vision. And without an economic vision, the people perish. And so we decided to start working with community leaders, and so we began to bounce these ideas off the community leaders that eventually moved to we ought to be the best at making things, manufacturing, moving things, intermodal facility, and creating things. So that's entrepreneurs. Most jobs start with entrepreneurs. So we want to be the best in the country at creating things, making things, moving things, as you've observed. And that led to the notion that we need to take our place on the international stage. We need to become, of course, a global economic center. And it's taking off like wildfire, and we're very proud of that.
So the kernel of this idea, Judge, comes from you, I take it. Where did it come from in you? What made you come up with this?
I'm a native, and there are a lot of people who who are coming here, and this community was formed by an immigration wave. And you correctly identified that this area has had the unique ability of people to come up with an idea and lever it out to the amazement of the rest of the nation. And we've been doing it for 250 years because all we have is ingenuity and this location on red clay with a river running through it. And you have to make the best that you can. In anticipation of the DNC, which was one of the drivers, Mayor Fox and Duke Energy CEO Jim Rogers and former Councilwoman Susan Burgess were going to bring it to town. And I believe that we needed to have at least some summary, some paper that would identify the course of business over time in Mecklenburg County, because otherwise folks in the concrete reefs to the north would once again characterize us as purely sweet tea, moonshine, barbecue, and stock cars, when actually the business model was far more complex. And in having these conversations with Dr. Zeiss, who introduced me to a number of the key leaders and players in the community, what became fascinating was to see all of the energy and all of the smart people working in different business sectors who were coming together to put together the seeds of the next boom. And it's going to be a game changer. It's going to be wonderful, create a lot of jobs, and it's multiple sector. We've always had been a one-crop area in the past.
One other thing I think is important to say, that no one person actually owns it. The seed started here, but it's really a grassroots movement to help this community and the region become a global hub of commerce, because we visited with a lot of people, and they all, each in their own way, contributed to the vision, which just emerged and developed over the last couple of years.
Mr. Mayor, I know that you've been using the bully pulpit of your office to encourage the city at large and the region at large to start thinking about this, thinking of itself on a global scale, I suppose. But if this is to happen, it seems to me you've got to get people in line to provide a lot of things that we don't yet have, or improve a lot of things that we do have, including infrastructure. And I know that your predecessor Anthony Fox had a great deal of difficulty with the streetcar project and a couple of roads projects as well. How do you convince people that this dream that may or may not come true is going to require infrastructure that's going to cost a lot of money, whether it comes true or not? How do you do that?
Well, one, I think you have to be confident in knowing that that it will happen, and that the idea of it not being able to happen is something that's just something you shouldn't even think about, because we have always been a can-do city, a can-do region, and we can make things happen, just as you mentioned at the beginning of the show, in terms of, you know, whoever thought that we would have achieved some of the things that we have achieved this day. So it goes without saying that we, if we're going to be, you know, for the most part, telling our youth that they need to be prepared to compete globally, then why wouldn't you have a mayor that will be thinking about being able to compete internationally as well?
But some of these,
as well as other leadership,
some of these infrastructure projects, though, will require not only city money, but county money, state money, federal money, and I would wager that the people in Washington don't necessarily share this dream with us.
Well, you know, I would think that they do, actually. You know, each time I've been to Washington, this being the fourth time in the last at least several weeks, there are two things that happen here on the Hill and or in the admin offices or at the White House that you hear. The two things that are spoken about happen to be infrastructure and education, making sure that you have a ready, willing, and able workforce, and secondly, making sure you have proper infrastructure in place. And so relative to what's happening with the intermodal facility, which opened up in December, and this idea that I've joined with others in terms of making Charlotte a global hub for the distribution of goods worldwide, it's one where they get and understand, because I've had the conversation with the president directly about the support from the feds to help us with what's going on in Charlotte, but then also making sure that we do what we need to do locally, and that is to help people to understand that should they support the bonds that will be coming up, that will allow for a bridge to be completed in our area. But for that support for those bonds, we may not be this city that should be a global hub. And here's why. If those bonds fail, then it means for the most part that being able to get those 200,000 containers that could potentially come in the future to and from may or may not happen. So we need to make sure that people get behind that, because it's a job creator. We're talking about over, 20 years or a $7.6 billion impact that it could have on our region. So that's important. I think people can get that.
And you're talking about the intermodal facility at this point. How critical, you think this is a critical thing for the city to have?
It is indeed. When you look at what we're trying to do and where we're going with what could happen in and around the area where the intermodal is, it's a very big deal. And so working with the city's aviation department, Norfolk Southern, of course, opened that intermodal facility, as I stated a moment ago, back in December, and it is expected to generate $7.6 billion in and regional economic development through the next 20 years.
Does it matter who controls the airport as to the outcome of this facility?
I think business right now is operating as it should, accordingly, at the airport. I would imagine that whatever happens in the way of where the control rests, it will still function as it should in the way of not slowing things down. However, you want to make sure that there aren't any issues out there because, look, the country's watching. The world is watching what's happening at the airport right now. And so we really need to continue to work toward getting that behind us, and we're making some real progress there.
Mark Beatty, you do this all over the country. You're a site selection person. What goes into that? And when you hear talk, when you maybe you're so tuned into this, this is not a good question to ask you, but when you hear talk about this city becoming a global financial or a global center for commerce and business, does it sound far-fetched to you, or as you look at other cities that you've worked with around the country, do we look particularly well-aligned for that sort of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. There are several key location strategy factors that companies look at. And over 25, 30 years that I've been involved in that, both in the consultancy side and working for a major global industrial manufacturing company, in every one of those, they really haven't changed. The prioritization and how they look at them changes a little bit. They always have workforce and labor at the top because at the end of the day, you have to have qualified people and skilled people to do a variety of activities. But we're talking here about infrastructure. And I was speaking a couple of weeks ago at the CCCP event. And in that, I was pointing out how important the airports are, more important now than ever in global commerce, in that you can move skilled people in and out. They have accessibility to markets. And even with high technology and the ability to communicate on multiple fronts, you have to still be able to move people and commerce back and forth. In this region, they're perfectly positioned with this dynamic I-85 corridor. And if you think in those terms of how commerce and goods move back and forth, that corridor that runs to Atlanta and starts really in the Raleigh region, you could argue all the way up to Richmond. But that is a dynamic corridor. If you look at what's happened in all of the municipalities along that corridor, it's been quite dynamic. You tie that with the importance and the elevation of the Charleston port and the link that it has and the ability to distribute and move commerce through this region, it's perfectly positioned for that.
I was just handed a card when I walked in the room by Dr. Zeiss, and on the back of the card, one of the facts on the card says more than 920 internationally owned companies have operations in the Charlotte region. And I was going to say this morning that we have done many shows on various different countries that are represented here by companies, some of whose U.S. headquarters are located here. How would this be different? If we already have 900 companies from around the world doing business, how would this elevation of Charlotte to an international hub of business be? What would it look like? What would be the difference?
Well, I think that's a basis of companies that are small, the 50, 60 employees, some that are 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, 10,000. You never can have enough, and you never can have enough diversity in that. But it's already a recognizable community and region for development. There are a lot of foreign companies here and in this region, and particularly the ones that are in Europe, for instance, like it has good accessibility.
Mm-hmm. I want to come back and ask the key question. Why Charlotte? Because there are probably other cities who are trying the same thing, have the same idea. Why us? We're going to come back in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and North Carolina Dance Theater's Cinderella, a dreams come true fairy tale ballet for all ages. Now through the 16th at Knight Theater, tickets at ncdance.org. And Justice Initiatives, now accepting applications for Court Camp, a one-week summer program at the Mecklenburg County Courthouse where teens can learn about the judicial system and legal careers. JusticeInitiatives.org. 45 states, including North Carolina, have adopted Common Core standards for education. Common Core has its fans and it has its detractors, but many on both sides of the issue believe the standards are flawed and should be replaced with other options. And this issue has made for some strange bedfellows. We'll meet an opponent and a proponent and talk about the issues of Common Core standards tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, tensions mount as the Crimean parliament votes to hold a referendum on whether to rejoin Russia. U.S. and EU leaders say that would violate international law. The West's response to a power struggle between Russia and Ukraine.
Join the conversation on the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about Charlotte as an international hub of business with Mark Beatty, a principal with Hickey & Associates. They are a site selection firm, among other things. Chase Saunders, an attorney with McNair Law Firm, who wrote the white paper, Create It, Make It, Move It, which crystallizes this idea. Dr. Tony Zeiss is the president of CPCC, and of course there's an educational component to the infrastructure here to make this region ready for this, and we'll talk about that as we go through the program. And Mayor Patrick Cannon joins us from Washington. Off the air, Mayor Cannon, I was told that the last mayor who really put a vision like this forward was Ben Douglas, whose name is on the airport. He wanted to make us a national city and let people in the rest of the nation know that we had national aspirations, which many of which have been achieved, and that you are the next person after him to have a new vision, which is an international one, and you've really been pushing this.
Well, I really have, and, all hail to Mr. Douglas back in the day, because he, of course, would have ignited this and started it. As a matter of fact, I worked at Charlotte Douglas Airport as a sky cap back in the day for Eastern Airlines, if you can remember Eastern Airlines.
Oh, yeah.
and to see now where we have come and all of the opportunity that's before us. So now we're talking about the air linkage, we have the road linkage, we have the rail linkage, and we have access to seaports. So, our airport is a really great airport. It's the sixth busiest in the country. We're running about 43 million people through there, which is up about 5%. So it's a wonderful place and a huge asset and a jewel for us.
So the question is why? Why Charlotte? Because there are other cities around the nation I know who have similar, if not identical, aspirations. So if you're sitting in Europe, or you're sitting in Beijing, or you're sitting in Zurich, or you're sitting somewhere else, why Charlotte? You have an answer for this, I know.
Well, first, go ahead, Mr. Mayor.
I'll yield the right away. Go ahead, Tony.
I was just going to say, as Chase mentioned, we've done a lot of research, and we're positioned geographically in a perfect spot with the highway corridor 7785. And then, of course, you got to remember that we're one of the few cities in America that has an airport that's really right downtown. It's not 40 miles away. That's a wonderful advantage. And then you take a look at what's happening at the Panama Canal. By next year, they will have that widened and deepened, and all those Asian ships, which are much larger than what we're used to getting, will now be able to come through there, come up the East Coast. So it's a tremendous market. All the stars are aligning perfectly for this region, and so someone's going to seize it.
One of you wrote this, and I don't know which one of you wrote this, but that in Charlotte you can create, import, manufacture, export, and deliver just in time anything, anywhere, and you can do it more economically and with a better margin of profit than anywhere else. Is that you?
Gallus, Michael Gallus.
Michael Gallus wrote that? He's brilliant.
Oh, you did that. Oh, I'm sorry.
You wrote that.
But Michael Gallus talks about it.
We Tony and I were referred by Bob Morgan to talk to Michael Gallus, and Michael Gallus said, it is fortuitous you came here, because this is what we've been planning out there at the airport, and we need to get the word out on that. The operative word for Charlotte going forward is logistics, which simply means flow. Today, we have all the knowledge in the world, since humankind has come around, accessible to all of us 24/7, and as we go and try and get a cell phone plan, we're engaged in the sample wars between Samsung and Apple as they try and give us a device that gets more to us quicker. What's getting ready to happen is the movement of stuff as quickly as possible. There's 7 mega regions in the United States. The world's being carved into mega regions. Centers where you can get stuff in or make stuff and distribute stuff cheaper because the word in flow and logistics is lowest cost location and provider wins. And that was the secret of the passenger airport, and that's the secret of the freight distribution.
So why
model.
Not Atlanta?
Atlanta's doing fine. They were called terminus at one end because all the railroads ended up down there. Their model is nice. We're up and coming. The ingenuity and the facility that we have that makes us unique is the following. We have 5,000 acres that the city has in the airport for an intermodal facility with about 5,000 acres expandable. An intermodal facility in every community, it's the buzzword coming up. Every community with a bike rack and a bus stop claims they've got one, but the only one on the East Coast is ours. And here's why. We'll be able to compete in passengers with Atlanta within the next 15 years. That's on the city plan. Mm-hmm. And in freight, the largest freight mover in the country is on the middle part of the United States to the East Coast is Houston with 600,000 containers. We have a facility that can handle that over the course of time. So we'll be the biggest location to move the most stuff, people and otherwise, over the next 20 years, coming online. But we've got to work it in order to make it happen.
But if you're coming up from the Panama Canal, why not drive your boat to Houston or New Orleans? Why come all the way around Florida to Wilmington or Charleston and put that thing on a rail car and ship it to Charlotte for distribution? Why is that quicker?
Just a quick observation there. Charlotte is an inland port. It is a city of ports. Norfolk Southern gets freight from all of the ports on the East Coast, all the ports on the Gulf Coast, and they all end up here. What really counts is you can't sell stuff to fish, but you sell it to a large market around your city. Our market is half the United States overnight, or 17 hours by train, 24 hours by truck. So if you're in a central location for moving stuff that comes in from all the ports in the world, you can export your stuff out too, and that's the new economy we're moving into.
No one's talked about shipping out from airplanes, and I read this thing yesterday where it said not a lot of this cargo is going to be shipped by airplanes, and yet this facility sits right at the airport. Why aren't we using airplanes? Because you're 3 hours from California on an airplane.
That just depends on the product that you're moving. But at the end of the day, where things are made and where they're delivered, shipping is huge, and rail is the next big huge. And so to the point earlier about – yes, Mayor. Sorry.
Go ahead. Yes, just a quick point here, too. I mean, you're asking, of course, you know, why not Atlanta? Why not maybe Houston? Why not even – well, you didn't say Miami, but – you know, one of the other reasons why Charlotte has become the place, and I think I heard someone say it earlier, but it's really because of the low costs. Per person, on average, to go through the port in Miami is about $20 per person. To go through our port here in Charlotte is about $2 per person. This, in turn, drives business development from those entities that might be domestically or that may be overseas between, let's say, Africa, Germany, China, India, who now have been knocking on the door saying they want to do business in the city of Charlotte. They get and understand that, and that in turn helps us to be able to lure people to this area to potentially a manufacturing or a warehousing type facility where now we can create jobs. That in turn allows us to expand our tax base, and from there we're able to reinvest back into the city. And lastly, you know, one of the things that I had a conversation with the president about was that dredging. Tony or someone mentioned about the Panama Canal widening, of course. And so from Miami to Jacksonville to Savannah to Charleston on up to New Jersey and New York, that's taken place because everyone understands that the East Coast is becoming the place where business needs to happen and where it can take place. So we're really excited about the opportunity. It would really help us if we could get the state to help us along the way with maybe Wilmington, with the infrastructure there, that could lead right into Charlotte even more so.
Why are our costs so much less than Miami's? I mean, $20 versus $2 is a big difference. So why are our costs so low?
It's the business model. It's where you would go and look to see where you can find within the workplace at the airport, where you can actually find savings, and they have been very creative over there in doing so. So, you know, hats off to our aviation director over there, Brent Cagle, and prior to him, Jerry Orr, for fixing it such that we would have a very cost-efficient type run facility that can and or will attract business. As long as we're able to continue to do that, even if we went up a buck or two, we're still in the running, I think, to continue to lure businesses to the city of Charlotte.
And one of the components of this that you've mentioned and other people have mentioned is that this will create jobs. But to keep costs low, will those jobs pay enough for people to live? Because you got to keep, you want to keep that $2 cost going there.
That's an excellent question. And that's another reason to bring up the whole concept of manufacturing. We're really focused on manufacturing jobs here, Mike, because that's who export things. And we can't become a global hub of commerce if we're not exporting things, and we want to export things, so that means somebody has to make it. That means advanced manufacturing. So we have, we being Central Piedmont Community College, have intentionally built bridges with Germany. That's who creates more manufacturing than anyone. And they export because they have a negative population growth. So when they export those manufacturing companies like Siemens and others that you've heard about, we want them coming to this region. And we want to be able to make sure that we can train them for what needs to be done.
What Tony's pointed out is the key. What we have is a workforce pipeline under development with the superintendent, with Tony Zeiss at Central Piedmont, and with the university to deliver high-quality labor. If you really look at what the airport is about, it's a giant commercial pump, if you will, almost a quasi-public utility that provides inexpensive transportation. The value and the profit margins to all the businesses which attach to it flow into better-paying jobs. So the model of keeping the costs low in the world of logistics allows you to be a participant. If you can't keep your costs low, you can tax things that are stationary, but you can't tax things that can move away from you and move to a location that's more cost-effective.
So as you deal with companies, Mark, who are looking for places to locate, obviously they have a list of needs and a list of desires, and you try to match them up with the cities that are offering things. What do we have to offer? How does what we have to offer stack up against what other similarly sized, larger or smaller cities have to offer?
Well, in selling the Charlotte city and in region, I have five that stand out. I happen to live here, which is pretty good too, so I can speak to it. Moved here about 5.5 years ago, and we love living here. We think it's a tremendous community. And it stands on 5 points. First, it has a great range of diverse businesses already, and it has proven business that has grown and been built here over time. That's very important because mm-hmm. companies look at trended data and how they evaluate risk, honestly, and how they think about midterm, long-term investment. You also have diversity in culture. It has grown in a great way, and the businesses that have grown here have drawn a lot of talent from all over. Now, there's great base talent here, but there's also a range of cultural differences, and diversity in that is also a way to navigate into a global economy. The third is it's got a wonderful leisure environment. So, you know, you can work 24/7, but most people do take some time off. So from time to time, you have to have an environment that promotes that. The weather here, despite this winter, has been – it's an incredible place. It has great diversity in the mountains. It has accessibility to the ocean. It has phenomenal facilities in which to take part in. So companies look also for their employees to have a rich, full 24/7 existence wherever they're going. That's also important in attracting talent to an area because you don't always find everyone you need. You have to attract certain folks. Fourthly, education. The platform of education – in every facet is so important. So when companies look, they look at K-12, they look at undergraduate, they look at graduate programs, they look at particularly, and Dr. Zeiss is here, community colleges, they're fully ingrained and participative in what's happening with the business community. So they have partnerships with those. And in many cases where they're establishing training and moving in that direction, that's very important. And finally, visibility and reputation. Communities that do what they say they'll do and are effective in doing it, and they're also fiscally responsible and they have a good platform of fiscal stability, are very much in the running for any opportunity. There are other examples elsewhere where they've gotten a little rocky here and there. And again, this is a trended issue. Thinking about over time, has this community demonstrated their discipline in managing their finances, in prioritization of the things they go after, and have a vision. And all of those things tied together, business, culture, leisure, education, and reputation, they're very strong building blocks for a community such as Charlotte.
Well, talk about this vision, because how important is this conversation, not necessarily the one we're having on the air, but the fact that these conversations have been going on for years now about this vision of becoming a global empire from Charlotte. How important is the fact that we've had these conversations?
It's important because when companies come to a community, they're not just going to listen to the consultant. And they shouldn't. They're going to listen to business leaders, those who have lived here and have taken part in that, as well as the leadership of the community, such as the mayor is on today. And they get a sense from all of that as to what the community sees itself in the future. Those that can articulate that and demonstrate that really have a competitive advantage. And so from that standpoint, they usually talk peer-to-peer to companies that are similar to them or at least in the same group grouping. And from that conversation, they'll get the straight and narrow. How good is the labor force, the retention aspect? What kind of issues should we expect? How about a business regulatory environment? Is this really a place that's pro-business and why? Mm-hmm. And from that conversation and then vision going forward, they can attach themselves to that. Those that align with that vision are a key partner in the future in building the economy.
Mr. Mayor, let's talk about the timing of all this, because it seems to me that this would not have been possible 30 or 40 years ago. We had to make an appearance on the national stage first, which we've done with the Hornets, now the Bobcats, the Panthers, the Democratic National Convention being here. Your predecessor, Anthony Fox, is the Secretary of Transportation, which gives Charlotte an entree to the halls of power in Washington. You're there today. You've met with the president. Other mayors have met with the president. I don't think that happened 50 years ago that the mayor of Charlotte would meet with the president of the United States. So did we have to make this emergence on the national stage first to make this a viable a dream?
I think in some cases you do walk before, you crawl before you walk. Obviously, I didn't. I think I walked before I crawled. I think you have to, take one step at a time. And I think over the years, we as a city with different types of leaders, be it the faith-based or private sector or nonprofit or even public sector, have been able to work together to be able to put Charlotte on the map in such a time where people are saying, you know what, we hear you, Charlotte. We see you. What can we do to help you? And so when I go to Washington these days, rather than there being two or three people in the room, which is what you ordinarily run into on the Hill, it's like 9 to 12 people there. And they're asking not only, what's your vision, but how is it that we can help you with other things that might be due, Charlotte? So I think we're in a good place, and I think we've got great people like those at the table this morning on the show, and we're going to continue to move forward. I will leave you with this. Not long ago, I was just here probably maybe a week and a half ago with Mayor Miles Atkins from Mooresville, and we led a global Charlotte manufacturing consortium here to the White House to discuss investing in manufacturing community partnership. This initiative basically is something that will accelerate the resurgence of manufacturing and create jobs in and around our region. And so we're hopeful that we'll be able to land this opportunity. Charlotte is now in the running for its share of what will be $25 million. From this program designed to aid communities that have shown that they can attract and grow advanced manufacturing. So all the things that Central Piedmont Community College is doing under the leadership of Dr. Tony Zeiss and what's happening with our area universities and what...
And let me stop you there, Mr. Mayor, because you have to go and we have to take a break. But I thank you for taking the time to be with us this morning. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Catawba College in Salisbury, offering the opportunity to design a major and education rich in personal attention, blending liberal arts with career preparation. Details at catawba.edu. And McCall Center for Visual Arts Studio Party 14. Support the center and preview Art Place America Environmental Artist in Residence, Aurora Robson's Stayin' Alive exhibition, Saturday, May 3rd. Tickets at mccallcenter.org. Tensions mount as the Crimean parliament votes to hold a referendum on whether to rejoin Russia. U.S. and EU leaders say that would violate international law, and guest host Susan Page and a panel of experts will talk about the West's response to a power struggle between Russia and Ukraine. Coming up in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show. Want to join our conversation? WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks is the place to start, and we are coming right back.
News happens all week, all around the world.
If you want to understand what this French election is all about...
Four candidates are running unopposed, and three of them met reporters Thursday.
Whatever the outcome of today's elections, the secessionist genie is out of the bottle.
News, analysis, perspective, music, books, and sports, too. Saturday on Weekend Edition from NPR News.
Tune in for Weekend Edition Saturday and Sunday mornings from 8 until 10 here on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the global competitiveness and Charlotte becoming a hub for global commerce, a dream that doesn't seem like so much of a pipe dream as it did at the start of the hour, with Mark Beatty, who's a principal with Hickey & Associates. They're a site selection firm, among other things. Chase Saunders is a former judge and an attorney with the McNair Law Firm and the author of Create It, Make It, Move It. I think he's too modest to say that the idea of all this actually probably started with him. Dr. Tony Zeiss, the president of CPCC, is also with us. And we, Patrick Cannon, the mayor of Charlotte, was with us until a few minutes ago and had to leave for an appointment. Let's talk about education, because one of the pieces of this infrastructure puzzle to make this happen is certainly education. Where are we? How prepared are we in that realm, Dr. Zeiss?
Frankly, I think we're very prepared. Heath Morrison, who, by the way, is, I just will say it, he's the best superintendent I've worked with, and I've been a president of a college for 29 years now. Not this one, almost 22 here, and then at another one in Colorado. And he and I talked about this at great length and said, you know what, economic development in its basic form is human development. So if we can't develop humans to have the skills and the knowledge to help their companies be productive and profitable, then we've got a big problem. And so we put together a workforce development plan. I don't know of many, if any. Maybe there's one other city in America that has a workforce development plan that is tied into their economic development plan. So we're going to be expanding our economic base from finance, energy, and healthcare, the three main pillars of our economy, to include advanced manufacturing, transportation logistics, and entrepreneurialism. And so we got together with our people and said, how can we make sure that we are training people from K through 12 through the community college to be prepared in the area of mechatronics, which is advanced manufacturing, in logistics, in transportation? How are we creating entrepreneurs? And that's where UNCC comes in. We, the college, Central Piedmont, has a small business development center, but they've gone a step beyond that. They have a small business development center. Then they also have this huge incubator facility that was just announced a week or two ago. So you've got everybody's lined up, K through 12, the community college, the university, to help make sure that these companies have a reliable supply of skilled workers. Take Siemens, for instance. Their main decision, whether they came to Charlotte with these gas turbines and all these great jobs, some 1,800 of them, was how can we be assured that we can get skilled workers? And basically, I will tell you how it happened. One of our instructors at the college said, well, how do you get these skilled workers in Germany? And they said, well, we have a training center in Berlin. And he said, well, why don't we send our instructors to be trained by you and be Siemens certified at Berlin? And that's what we did. And that's basically, you know, the rest is history.
I know that you've been working over there at CP 4 years in with companies to help them train workers. What percentage of your students are there to simply be trained to do a job versus getting ready for a four-year college or finishing off high school or whatever else they're there for?
You've got that's a wonderful question. Basically, it's 40%. So 40% of our 70,000 students don't care about college credit. They're not trying to get a GED or learn English as a second language. They're there to learn a certification or a skill to get a job, keep a job, or improve
themselves. Do you see that number growing?
I do. As a matter of
the
fact.
Reason I ask, and I don't mean this pejoratively, but the reason I ask is that if 60% of the students at CP are there because they're getting ready to go to a two-year school, doesn't that mean that the K through 12 educational system has not prepared them properly to go right into a four-year school? They have to come to you to increase their skill level because they didn't get it when they were in the public schools.
There's much to be said about that. Our developmental education students, those who have to get remediated before they can get into college-level classes, is growing and has been across the nation. It's not an indictment on CMS. I would say we're working very closely with CMS now to where we are helping to reduce that number because in some cases we are into high schools before we get those students. So we're trying to identify them early, make sure that their counselors know they're there, do what we can as a college to help remediate them while they're still there.
How do our students, the graduates that are coming out of CMS, the people that are coming out of CPCC, how do they compare to similar situations in other cities around the country? Because CMS gets a bad rap here at home, and yet when you go to national educational conferences, they're pointed out as being the gold standard of public school education. I don't know why there is that double standard. Maybe it's because we don't appreciate things that are too close to us. But how do they compare?
Well, I don't have.
We want to be competitive globally.
I don't have all those statistics, except to say that consistently they have won the national awards on the best urban school district, and that goes back several years, of course, and several superintendents. However, the biggest problem is the dropout. In some of our majority-minority schools, we have up to 60% dropout. So that's where most of the work needs to be done.
And then when you have a legislature that is cutting the funding for public education, what does that say to the global business person who's looking for educated, skilled workers and who wants to come to a culturally diverse location where we have teachers who are 40th in terms of pay and dropping quickly?
Well, from the clients we see and what they look at, certainly education and what they can expect in a local and regional area is very important. They have the perspective.
I mean, 40th is not far from 50th, which is Mississippi.
Right. Well, it hasn't hurt certain businesses to come if they know that there's enough in terms of population in the MSA, and they will look at statistics that rate where there is advanced education, where there's an undergraduate degree and there's a high school diploma. The quality of that education, and I think tied back to my earlier comment about diversity in the workforce and the repopulation of it, it's certainly a challenge. It's not only a challenge here, it's a challenge in a lot of places. So while focus has been in other areas, reinvesting in education is incredibly important. On the other hand, they have and recognize companies that, depending upon what they need, what they're looking for, is key. There are some companies I've seen who are operating in communities that you wouldn't consider high performance in education, but they've taken it upon themselves to educate their workforce for what they need. They look for aptitude. They look for reliability. They look for dedication. And they are learning organizations. For that matter, any company today that isn't thinking innovative and isn't thinking innovation comes just out of the sky, it comes from constant education, constant engagement in learning. So in this community, I think there's great possibility.
And you brought up the point that the legislature, of course, they're faced with Medicaid and all sorts of entitlement programs, and there's only so much money. But the sad truth is we've dropped 20, we being community colleges, there are 58 in the state, we've dropped 24% in state funding since the recession.
So how does that impact what you're able to do?
Well, it impacts a great deal because you can't hire more full-time teachers. You have to hire more part-time teachers, and you've got accreditation issues with that. And
so the question becomes, is the state on board with this? Because there's always been this battle between the great state of Mecklenburg and the state of North Carolina. We have these glorious ambitions, and those people sitting in Raleigh don't give a rat's ass.
No, I'll tell you what's really important. They finally, I think they're getting the idea they're going to have to help teachers. Mm-hmm. And I would say not just K through 12 teachers. The teachers at community colleges and universities work just as hard, and it's just as important that we can keep them because they're affecting people and putting people in jobs. And I can speak for our faculty, maybe not for others, but I can tell you we have the best in the country, and they have not complained one bit, but the time has come. We need to support our faculty.
Ida emails, what is the role of the state of North Carolina in helping Charlotte become a global economic center? The current leaders seem to be focused on lowering taxes at the expense of education and other services that your guests are saying are critical to bringing in business. What is it when global leaders look at what's happening in North Carolina, do they see it through a different lens because they're not as familiar with the politics?
Well, they're pretty attuned to that. I mean, and when we're working with them, and we look at all criteria and site selection, and just to highlight a few, certainly we talked about workforce. We look about market growth potential, customer proximity, infrastructure, supply chain. But they look at taxes and regulatory environment as key, and particularly in that case, profitability and margins, which is a basis of all business, has to have a balance between where we are in selling our goods and services and the gap between what it costs us to be in that business and look at that gap as a measure. Some businesses function very nicely on 5% and 6% margins. Others expect to be at 25% and 30% margins. So it really depends on what it is. But they also have to see that there is some competitiveness. And so from my perspective, I think generally businesses would look at North Carolina and what they're doing from a tax environment perspective is very positive. It certainly is going to put them on a playing field with their neighboring states where prior they didn't have that advantage. And so they can stand on other criteria and compare on that basis and not so much on being a heavier taxed environment than what has been the case in the past.
I want to go back to a term that you, Dr. Zeiss, have used a couple of times in this conversation that I don't know people understand what it is. Advanced manufacturing. On the face of it, it sounds pretty obvious, but maybe it's not. So what is advanced manufacturing?
Oh, thank you. It's a term that surfaced actually probably in the last 10 years. And basically it says those manufacturing companies that are taking advantage of technology, new technologies to produce things more effectively and more efficiently and faster are considered to be advanced manufacturing. Mechatronics is a term you will begin to hear more and more. And this school, Central Piedmont, created the first mechatronics degree in America. Where did we get it? From the Germans. And so we've brought it over. Now we're teaching other college and university faculty on teaching mechatronics, and it's sweeping the country. And basically, it's mechanical engineering, it's electronics, and it's computer control systems all put together.
And the people who are trained to fill those positions in industry, what kinds of jobs are they? What do they pay those jobs?
Well, the jobs are paying typically $60,000 to $70,000 to begin. Those are good jobs. Those are primary jobs, and they're exporting. And I must say, the more we can help existing businesses learn to export and get more involved in the use of technology, so that they're more efficient and effective, the better off we will be. A rising tide, you know, floats all boats. So these are very good jobs, and they are not – people think about the dirty floor and the oil flying around. It's not that way anymore. In advanced manufacturing, it's all very clean technology, and it's all computer-based.
Chase Saunders, since this was your – the idea of this is kind of yours, at least in its nascent form, you have referred to the four booms and busts in Charlotte history, in gold, in our early flirtation with being a military center in the early 20th century, textiles and banking. And you say that this has all made us stronger, these booms and busts, and that this intermodal facility might provide the impetus for the fifth – boom.
It's a catalyst. We're involved in competing for our existence. Regions and cities in the United States are under stress for financial reasons and otherwise. Some are growing, some are not. this facility, which is a gigantic commercial pump, allows both information and products to come in and flow out quickly at a low cost. The Coming Jobs War by Jim Clifton lays this out. When everybody in the whole world has access to all the information at the same time, there's no advantage. The question then becomes, how do you use that information? And those areas that have the highest educated workforce making the highest quality goods, and the location is critical to getting them in and getting them out quickly, will be rising cities. And Charlotte has an opportunity to create a regional city-state on the back of that facility, which the taxpayers have funded, bought, and paid for, and the wise leadership of the community over the years has allowed to happen.
We've talked about what we have that makes this a possibility, or even a probability. What do we not have that we need to have?
I'll take the first shot. We have not yet gotten everyone to understand the opportunities behind a vision like this. For example, small, medium-sized manufacturing companies, or anyone who produces a good or a product that can export. We need to help them to ask the question, how can we take advantage of this opportunity? How can we learn to export things and expand, you know, our own market base? Mm-hmm. So that's why we're holding these global competitiveness summits.
And what's at stake here? Maybe you want to answer that question too before I move on, but what's at stake here?
Our survival. We've got to leverage the assets we have. We need new sector strategies. We significantly need new investment capital. Over the course of, if you read history, you hear about the cities in the past, Venice, Athens, all these little cities, but they were all critically supported by the infrastructure, and they levered their location into prominence so that we talk about them today. We're a young city, but we have these assets, a significant number that are in place, and we need to lever it out. We have a tremendous number of smart people here. Had an opportunity to meet them. Dr. Zeiss is certainly one of them. And these people are trying to lead us forward, and we need to engage in the conversation and broaden out because it belongs to all of us.
Let me ask you, and also Mark Biddy, you, because you deal with this all over the country, is this ours to lose?
Yes, very much. I mean, you got to look at the competition is everywhere, and it's fiercer than ever. So it's time to get going and focus and continue the dialogue. If you're not talking about it, it's not happening.
You can go to cpcc.edu/global for more information about Charlotte being a hub of global commerce. I want to thank Dr. Tony Zeiss for being here, the president of CPCC, Chase Saunders with the McNair Law Firm, Mark Beatty, principal with Hickey & Associates, and earlier in the program, the mayor of Charlotte, Patrick Cannon. Thank you all for the hour. I appreciate it.